Are you intrigued by the world of business and very early in your career? Are you considering a management degree, either early or later in your career, but Europe is calling your name? This is a show for you. Welcome to the 249th episode of Admission Straight Talk, except it's a podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best programs for you. This podcast is brought to you by Accepted's Masters in Management Admissions Consulting. If you want to access experience and expertise that you simply don't have, if you want to save time and optimize your application, visit accepted.com/MIM. That's M-I-M. Our guest today is Jamie Wright. She grew up in California, started her career in PR in Chicago, and then crossed the pond in 2009 to become the client services manager at London Business School's then brand new Masters in Management program. Jamie rose to become the admissions director for all early career programs at London Business School by 2017. And those programs include the Masters in Management, the Global Masters in Management, and the Masters in Financial Analysis at London Business School. Jamie joined Accepted in 2018 and is now an Accepted admissions consultant. Let's learn from her if there is a magic sauce to acceptance at these schools and programs and what it is. Let's learn what is the key that unlocks the door to acceptance at early career programs and European management programs, whatever the level of one's experience. Jamie, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Now, before we get to the early career stuff, how does a California girl end up as client services manager and then the first admissions director of London Business School's early career programs? What's the backstory?
Yeah, kind of by chance, actually. So when I guess this is some things, you know, happened just by chance. When I moved to London, I wasn't able to actually work initially due to some visa restrictions. So I had some extra time to kind of explore career options. And like you mentioned just now, I'd been working in public relations in my sort of pre-London life. And while I considered staying in that field, I used that opportunity of time to explore some other roles. And I looked at publishing, I looked at sort of sports business, and ended up coming across an advertisement for the client services role for the MIM at LBS. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it had only just launched a few months before and were recruiting for the first class. So I thought it'd be a really good opportunity to be part of something from the beginning. So it was quite, when I joined, entrepreneurial in the sense that we worked, you know, somewhat as a startup. Obviously, we're in this big, you know, large school and in business school, but being the first pre-experienced program to launch at LBS, it was really exciting to be part of that. And I stayed part of that for the next nearly 9 years.
Okay. What are early career programs in management, just in terms of a general overview? What do they usually teach? What do they cover? What kind of jobs do graduates get?
Yeah, so they're general management programs. There are programs that have the option to specialize or take pathways in particular areas like marketing, strategy, accounting, for example. But in the really general management programs for those individuals who are just entering into their careers. So students in early career programs tend to have less than 1 or 2 years of experience and really looking to go into entry-level positions after completing their graduate studies. So those that are just kind of getting into that bottom rung of the career ladder.
Do they go into investment banking, consulting, you know, product development roles?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, any place where you could conceivably go into business, you would expect an early career student to enter into. And in addition to the sort of traditional consulting, finance roles, you see more and more students going into entrepreneurship. And entrepreneurship is one of those specializations that you do see in some MIM programs, for example.
Okay. How do the Masters in Management programs differ from the MBA in terms of their structure, content, length, goals and placement?
So I guess in terms of where they are similar, they're both general management programs. Mm-hmm. But the MBA is really for those individuals who are looking to accelerate or develop their careers, whereas the MIM is about gaining the knowledge and the skills to help you break into your business career. So they're aimed at individuals in very different points in their careers. The MBA students tend to have kind of on average like 5 to 8 years of work experience. And they really learn from their peers' practical experience, whereas the MIMS, they might, you know, have shorter internships and have some experience, but they're really building their learning through the classroom environment. So that sort of career stage is one of the differences. Like we already mentioned, the MIMS will be applying for entry-level positions, so career support will obviously be aimed at that. And MBAs may be looking to move into more sort of senior management roles or start businesses, and their career support will be tailored to kind of that level of career. So that's sort of in the, I guess, on the profile side of things. From a content perspective, maybe kind of a, from the outside, the MBAs may look a little bit more practical than the MIMS. You're likely to find more theory-based MIMS, but there's definitely no shortage of early career programs which do focus on practical and applied learning. So, you know, you'll find MIMS and MBAs which do offer internships and study abroad opportunities and ways to kind of get an insight into sort of how business actually works outside of the classroom.
Are MIMS usually 1 year or 2 years? Or does it vary?
You get both formats. Yeah, you get both formats. And like the MBAs as well. I mean, you know, you see with the European MBAs, for example,
right.
They tend to be more sort of within the 12 to 18 month format. And then with the US programs, you see sort of around the 2 year format. And it's very similar for the MIMS as well.
And in, when you talk about entry-level positions, I mean, I guess MBAs are going more for middle management, and obviously they experience is assumed, so they do tend to get positions higher up. Do you have any idea how many MIM graduates, are there any statistics on this, go back and ultimately get an MBA? Or for most MIM students, is it a terminal degree?
I'd say it's definitely not a terminal degree. Just as, you know, pursuing a business or management degree at the undergraduate level wouldn't preclude anyone from pursuing a MIM or an MBA. Just because you pursue a MIM or a master's in finance, for example, when, you know, you're just starting out your career, it doesn't mean that you won't be able to pursue an MBA or an advanced finance degree later on. Certainly there are students who do that. You know, I think if you're an early careers candidate and you're, you know, 22, 23 years old, just beginning your career, it's difficult to say whether you'll need an MBA 6 or 7 years down the line. You know, you might find it's necessary to advance your career. Some companies, you know, want to have MBAs on staff. You might need it in order to switch careers. But what I've always said is that if you're an early careers candidate who's in the job that you would be aiming for after completing a MIM or MIF, for example, mm-hmm. and you can see really growing in that role or company for the next few years, then I'd encourage you to think about what value you would gain from an early careers program at that point in time. And maybe it would make sense to kind of stay in that role or company and then look to do an MBA. But if you feel like you're lacking the knowledge to break into business, you know, you might come from a non-traditional business background, or you're lacking the network you need to get into your desired industry, or maybe you need more exposure to the business world to even kind of decide exactly what you do want to do. You know, maybe you might know you want to do something in business, but don't know exactly what that is. Then, you know, I think the early career programs can be incredibly beneficial as that sort of first step into business.
Are most MIM students coming from non-business undergraduate degrees?
No, it depends on the program. I mean, there are some programs which do require that students come from, I guess, what might be considered sort of a non-traditional business background, i.e. they have, you know, studied economics, business management, finance, accounting. Likewise, there are some programs which look for students who come from those backgrounds, and some programs which accept students from both, sort of poets and quants, mm-hmm. as it were. So it really depends on the program. So it's, you know, really encourage any applicant to take a very close look at the profiles of the programs you're looking to go into. You just want to make sure you're, you know, in a place that, well, obviously it's right for you, but that you'll be learning alongside people who you feel that you'll benefit most from.
Right. You know, on the MBA level, I think MBA programs generally look for people who have some fairly clearly defined goals, or most MBA programs do, not all. Is that true on the MIM level also?
Yeah, I think with anything from a career's perspective, regardless of what career stage you're at, you do want to go into the program with some type of focus. You know, programs, as we said, might only be 10 months, you know, even an 18-month program. program, they go by pretty quickly. And you need to have some sense of what you want to do from a career perspective, so you can take advantage of all of the resources that are available to you as soon as the program starts. Especially, I mean, in London here, for example, finance and consulting recruitment happen very early on. Applications open as early as August, and you might not even have started your program at that point. So you need to have a good sense of, you know, what it is you want to do, so you can kind of start utilizing those resources and career support ASAP once you begin your program. But I wouldn't, you know, I always say you need to be focused but flexible, because obviously you need to, you know, have some flexibility so you are able to, you know, move to, you know, maybe another country if you're able to, you know, join the company that you're interested in, but it's in a different country. Perhaps you need to go into a slightly different role, but it will allow you to get, you know, in the mid or longer term to where you want to be. So it's, I think having that understanding of the different, you know, the plan A, the plan B, the plan C. So being focused but flexible is what I would say.
Okay. Now let's change the focus a bit. How do European MBA programs as a group, and I realize we're talking in generalities, differ from U.S. MBA programs? Just an overview.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned briefly that the European MBAs tend to be a little bit shorter. Again, not all, but, you know, you see some of the shorter programs maybe that are sort of around a year and a year and a half, where some of the American counterparts tend to follow the two-year format.
Right.
And there are, you know, differences, you know, aside from the price tag and living costs to the one in the two-year format. Not that one is, I would say, also add to that, that not one isn't, you know, better or worse or right or wrong. It just kind of depends on what's best for you and your career journey. In terms of work experience, I would say that you tend to see slightly more experienced students in the European MBAs. Mm-hmm. We're talking, you know, only a couple of years difference, but the wider experience range will potentially give you access to a different peer group to learn from. And I know I just talked a little bit about, you know, wanting to make sure you're in the classroom where you feel you'll be able to learn from, you know, the type of individuals that you feel you need to learn from. I'm sure any MBA would tell you that they learn as much from their classmates as they do from faculty. So that's why, again, looking at those class profiles is important. And then I guess from a class profile perspective as well, in terms of the class composition, you tend to get very international cohorts in the European MBAs. I mean, you obviously get a very diverse peer group in the American MBA programs, but with the European MBAs, I think you tend to see students looking to work in locations, in Europe and in Asia. So you'll expect to see, you know, should expect to see a large proportion of international students in those programs.
I think just the geography of Europe actually contributes to that, because in a much smaller geographic area, you have so many different cultures and nationalities and nations.
You know, absolutely, absolutely. And there's so much, obviously, to learn from that, from being in those type of environments.
Right. What if I would really love to, say I'm an applicant, what if I would really love to spend a year or two in Europe, either at an early career program, a traditional full-time MBA, or even an executive MBA or London Business School Sloan Fellows program, but I know I want to work in my home country, be it the United States or somewhere else. Will it be hard for me to come home and find a job?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the amount of work you're willing to put into your career search. I'd say from a career perspective, it's important to think about the network. Mm-hmm. I would think that, you know, most students who I've spoken to who are looking to pursue their graduate studies in business are hoping to grow their network in some way. And if you need to strengthen your network in Europe, for example, you might need to look at European programs, because, you know, ultimately you want to go where your potential connections are.
Right.
So I think that's something definitely to think about. But, you know, the network of the school can help you to return home, absolutely. And that's where conducting your research into the programs is really important, because you want to have a look at the alumni network and the, you know, post-program employment destinations. You know, there are a lot of schools that produce employment reports and supply information about where students go afterwards or where alumni go, you know, 3, 10 years down the line. And that's where you can get a sense of, actually, you know, I'm studying in, you know, Germany, but I want to go back to, you know, Russia, for example. How many people, you know, can I find within the network who can help me with that? So that's where the, you know, power of that alumni network becomes really important. So, yeah, I'd say that that's a network piece. In terms of, I guess, conducting your due diligence before you leave, if you're mm-hmm. studying abroad, I'd suggest, you know, work on strengthening your network at home. If looking at the alumni networks and those employment, you know, post-program employment destinations are important. But if you know you're going to be studying abroad, and you won't, you know, perhaps have time to return to your home country during your studies, you know, use the time before you travel, you know, to France, for example, and build the relationships and meet with the people or the companies you'd be looking to turn to when it's time to return home and once you finish your degree, so that they don't forget about you. So, you know, I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, no, it's not necessarily hard to go home, but you might have to put in some work to find out how you can best utilize the resources and the network to help you do that.
Okay, great. Similarly, is it worth it if I want to live and work in my home country to have international experience for my master's in management or you know, wherever I want to work? Is it important to admissions to master's in management programs to have, especially in Europe or the MBA programs in Europe, to have international experience?
I would say that having international experience isn't a prerequisite. I think what's most important is being able to demonstrate that you have that interest in gaining the international experience and why you have that interest. For many people, the opportunity to study abroad is the first opportunity to get exposure to a different way of thinking or a different way of working. And that should be highlighted in your application and your essays. So no, not at all. It's not a prerequisite to studying abroad. And in fact, I think it's always, you know, really interesting to see about, you know, when you're reading an application about an applicant's interest in, you know, studying abroad, where at that particular point in their life, you know, how that fits into their professional or even their personal journey, because there's a lot to gain personally as well from studying abroad.
Oh yeah, it's a fantastic
experience. Professional. Yeah, and I say that as someone who's been both a student and a professional abroad. You know, there's tons to gain.
Yeah, it's a very broadening experience.
It is, and you know, I think nowadays it's you know, having a global mindset and understanding how to work with people who have different approaches to work or problem solving due to their background. It's important. I mean, even if you don't work internationally, you know, most of us at some point in life work with people who, you know, you might not be best friends with, and you might, you know, not necessarily have the same approach to working with, and that's just life. And what better way to learn about that than in the, you know, fairly comfortable environment of the, you know, the academic environment.
Right. It's just I did a year abroad when I was in college, and I look back on it very fondly, and it was a fantastic experience. So
it is. I think you'd be hard pressed to find anyone who didn't enjoy, you know, to even a, you know, tiny, even a tiny bit, you know, study abroad experience.
Right. All right. You've convinced me. Let's say I'm applying to an MBA or a MIM program, and I want to learn about the schools that I'm most interested in, and I know the best way to learn about them is to visit them. But plane flights from my continent to Europe, or my city, Los Angeles, to Europe are expensive and time-consuming, and the great ways to get the cold that I already have. How can I learn about programs and engage with a school if thousands of miles or kilometers separate us? Or do I just have to bite the bullet and fly to them?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have the opportunity to visit any of the campuses you're thinking of studying at, I'd certainly encourage anyone to do so. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to be putting down a fair amount of money to study for your MBA or MIM or MIF, and be spending presumably a lot of time on campus, you know, in the classroom and you know, working together with your study group. So you want to make sure it's a place where you feel comfortable. But there are plenty of ways to get a sense of what the student experience is like without having to buy an expensive plane ticket. You know, there are, which unfortunately most of them are nowadays.
Of course.
And you know, I say definitely attend. Have a look at MBA or master's fairs. You know, there are a lot of different fairs which travel internationally, might be held locally to you. And oftentimes, in addition to the admissions representatives, you can meet with alumni or current students who might be on exchange in your local location who can tell you about that experience. There are, you know, no shortage of webinars, virtual campus tours. A lot of schools have that as well now, so you can actually see the campus without being there. Mm-hmm. And definitely always, always recommend contacting student ambassadors or alumni. You know, you can do the old-fashioned way, well, old-fashioned nowadays, I guess, via email. you know, you obviously want to be mindful of communication. I think it should go without saying, but, you know, you don't want to bombard people with emails. You want to personalize your communications, not sending a blanket email to a large group of people. You know, as, you know, student ambassadors, they talk, admissions teams, they talk. So, you know, personalize those communications, but contacting students and alumni, you know, they're the best people to tell you about that whole experience. So, yeah, I think if you can visit, it's great, but there are definitely plenty of ways to get that student experience feel without sort of physically experiencing it.
All right. When you were reviewing applications for London's early career programs, What were the one or two things that you wish they really understood about the admissions process or the London Business School MIM that most just didn't get?
I wouldn't say most didn't get it, but I'd always be really disappointed when I see applicants who look really good on paper, you know, great experience, able to demonstrate that, you know, they're pursuing their interests and their goals, but just not putting any effort at all into the application. And, you know, we on the admissions, you know, admissions personnel understand that applicants are applying to multiple schools, which is absolutely expected. But, you know, we want to see that you have a genuine interest in the school that you are applying to, and, you know, submitting generic short answers or essays with the wrong school in them, or, you know, which don't illustrate that you've done any research into the school. You know, it could be the program specifics, the content, the school's values. That doesn't help us to see your motivation. And, you know, that's what admissions, you know, the teams, they're looking to see. I'd say on the flip side of that, though, it's equally important to be mindful of the admissions team's time. So, you know, obviously they want to read about your journey and their story, but they want to see it in a concise way. And writing lengthy answers where, you know, you might not have word limits, it might seem like a good way to show your motivation and your interest, but it can actually show, you know, potentially a slight lack of awareness and not seeing, you know, being so considerate of your reader's time. So, you know, it's finding that balance, you know, being able to demonstrate your motivation, show that you've done your research, but doing so in a, you know, hopefully concise way.
Okay, great advice. What advice do you have for applicants other than what you just said? For applicants in the midst of applying to early career management programs or to European MBA programs, they're in the process now. They're planning to apply, you know, for upcoming deadlines either this month or in a month or two. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's not too late to sort of do that due diligence we spoke about earlier. So, you know, reaching out to the students and alumni and admissions teams to find out about that student experience or what, you know, the teams are looking for. In candidates, you obviously want to make sure you're not doing it kind of on the day of the deadline, but if you have some time, it's not too late to make a phone call or, you know, attend a webinar. I think for anyone who is looking to apply for the August, September 2018 intakes, you also want to have a look at scholarship deadlines. Excuse me, if you're looking to apply for scholarships, you know, once you get into sort of round three, round four, you might see some of the deadlines passing or fewer scholarships being available. So that's something to look at. And also for international students who might need a visa to study in the country that of the school that you're hoping to go to, have a look at the visa timelines as well, because you'll want to have an idea of what to expect should you be accepted. You might have a fairly tight turnaround time for having to submit your visa documents.
Okay. What about those planning ahead? You mentioned the, you know, 2018 matriculation. What about those planning ahead for a 2019-20 or later application?
I say definitely use the time to your advantage. You know, it's not often we have time to use to our advantage, but if you've got it, definitely say to use it. You know, take time on the test side of things to prepare for the GMAT or GRE. You know, you can take practice tests to find out sort of which sections you'll ace without much prep, which ones you'll need to spend more time revising for, so you can, you know, kind of make a study plan. Obviously, we talked about, you know, doing that in-depth research into the program, visiting the campuses if you're able to, or finding out when those, you know, MBA or master's fairs are going to be coming around to your local towns. I'd say have a look at the current application form and essays for the school that you're applying for. Most schools, you can just, you know, create a login nowadays and have a look through without being obligated to submit the form. Most schools will, well, some schools, I guess, will change their short or long form questions slightly year to year. But I think having a look through the current form will really give you a sense of, you know, the type of individual they're looking for, the values that they want to see, and what sort of questions they might want answers to when you apply. And likewise, I'd say the same for application deadlines. They tend to only vary slightly year to year, just kind of along with the calendar change. So, you know, work to build yourself a timeline so you can really get a sense of, you know, when you're going to be applying, and work backwards to find out, you know, to have a think about when you'll need to sit GMAT or GRE, when to approach referees, and start working on your application form. So I think that timeline piece is important, and especially for those students who are in work full time and will be, you know, doing the whole application process along with working. And likewise, those students who are in their final year of their undergraduate degrees and have dissertations and exams to prepare for.
Sure. Sure, this is great advice. Thank you very much. Now, you've emphasized time and timeline and time management. I think we're running out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me for this podcast, number 249, and thank you for sharing your experience and perspective. Listeners,
thanks, Linda.
You're welcome. Listeners, if you'd like to work with Jamie on your MBA or other graduate management program applications, I'll link from the show notes at exhibit.com/249 to both Jamie's Contact Me page and our service descriptions, as well as to other related resources and previous podcast episodes. Listener, thank you, too, for tuning in to this, our 249th episode. If you find this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/249. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.